My name is Annie Warmke.
And I'm Jay Warmke.
From Blue Rock Station, Sustainability Center in Southeast Ohio. 40 acres and a mule surrounded by reality.
Or what passes for reality.
Oh, okay. Whatever you say. So, what is reality, Jay?
All right. Well, I don't know. I guess reality is ever changing. We're facing an era of time that's changing dramatically right now. What we like to talk about at Blue Rock Station is that we are coming to the end of the age of fossil fuels. And I think most people don't really realize it. And it's largely because they're too close to it. You know, I think about 100 years ago when we transitioned from the horse and buggy to the automobile, and people would never have believed at that moment if you had asked them. They say, okay, that automobile that's over there is about to change the world, not only how you get around, but also the structure of society, the structure of our cities. And it's because they would have a lot of reasons why it wouldn't work. You know, there are no roads. There's no way to fuel it. Horses and buggies have been around for thousands, tens of thousands of years. And this is a rich man's toy that doesn't work very well. And yet we know in retrospect that that was the moment about 100 years ago when we changed dramatically. And we're in that same position right now with the age of fossil fuels coming to an end. And
it's the end of the world as we know it. Thank God.
Thank God. That's yes. Right. Mm-hmm. And really, it's the end of the world as we know it since World War II. You know, our society, we always think that these things have lasted forever. But the society that we're used to and that we've been living in has really been a post-World War II society. I like to think about, like, my mother. She was born in 1929. Well, 1932 was the first year that a barrel of oil was produced in Saudi Arabia. So if you think about it, in my mother's lifetime, and she's still alive living in Florida, half of all of the fossil fuels that have ever existed on this planet have been consumed just in one person's lifetime. And that is just simply not a sustainable thing.
So what you're telling me is that we are entering an age of renewable energy, and you are arguing this point? Is that what you're doing?
Well, there's not a whole lot to argue.
It's
a reality. I mean, I'm right, and anyone who says differently is wrong. I mean,
I've noticed that.
Well, you can take that as a truism. So.
Well, I think it's interesting when we think about, you know, where we've come from. This is just my shtick anyway, is that women in the beginning of the automobile industry, women were the deciders. They had electric vehicles in the very beginning, and but nobody was going to have two vehicles. So what happened? What's the story on that? Why didn't we get to have electric vehicles from that point?
Right. Well, there's that semi-famous movie of not too long ago, Who Killed the Electric Car? And it was really talking about the round of electric vehicles in the 1970s, but the electric car had been killed off earlier. In fact, the very first electric vehicles around 1900s, in that decade, the majority of the cars that were out on the road were electric. And they had a lot of advantages. And the problem that they really ran into is that they were marketed towards women. For many reasons. They're easy to start. They were safe. They were reliable. All of the same advantages electric cars have today. But, of course, the men in that age were going to be the decision makers. And so when they began to market the vehicles, the internal combustion engine, as a male kind of macho vehicle, then, of course, the women had to step aside. But famously, Henry Ford's wife refused to ride in a car that was not electric. In fact, she said she was not going to ride around sitting on top of a bomb, which obviously you fill a tank full of gasoline and that's what you've got.
Well, the reality is, at the end of the day, it didn't matter if women didn't want it or did want it, because the deciders were much more focused on things like the fossil fuel industry and promoting that and not electricity. So right now, one of the things that we're dealing with, I think, in our culture, especially here in Southeast Ohio, is that we are at the end of the fossil fuel age, even though some of us don't want to admit that. And we like to blame the government or say it's just a matter of the president changing his mind about who's going to provide energy to us. But in reality, everything points to it's ended, and we're just waiting for it to be identified by the major corporations and so forth. But when we talk about the end of coal and gas and oil, we're not really saying it's all going to go away, are we? We're saying it's going to just be diminished.
Right. Well, to get back to your first point, you know, we did see that rather dramatically in the last presidential election, and even a little before that, where you saw the billboards and the, you know, yard signs saying "Stop Obama's War on Coal," as if a president can have a war on, you know, a fossil fuel and be very successful with it. And of course, President Trump with his, you know, "Let's make coal great again," you know, beautiful.
No, I think that's America.
Oh, okay, beautiful, beautiful, clean coal.
Beautiful, clean coal.
And the sad reality is that in Appalachia anyway, coal is past its prime. I mean, it is a industry in decline, and all of the wishing and hoping is not going to change that. It's sort of like the analogy I've heard said is sort of looking to the day when your father worked in the rotary telephone business, and those were good days, and those were good paying jobs, and we ought to bring rotary telephones back. The reality is you're not going to. You know, the coal, when compared with all of the alternatives, is terribly expensive. Coal is used in America really for only two things. It's for generating electricity and some for smelting aluminum. And the alternatives are much cheaper. So Appalachian coal became more and more expensive as we dug it out of the ground. And once you reach a certain point, it gets more and more expensive each ton of coal you want to drag out. And at some point, and that point has been probably about 15 years ago, coal became too expensive to mine in Appalachia compared to the other options. Today, coal is about three times as expensive as solar, as wind, and as natural gas. So really nobody is building a new coal power plant for purely economic reasons. So,
but I just want to say that we still need rotary phones, because if there's no electricity, we have no way to call each other. And it's true that a lot of the phone companies have come and taken away their equipment, but there are still a lot of people who don't have access to broadband, and they don't have access to for their mobile phones to reach emergency numbers. So I still think there's going to be a need for coal. I still think there's going to be a need for gas and oil, but it's going to be really, really minuscule.
Well, comparatively. In fact, I think if you look at it, you say at some future date, people are going to look back and say, "You mean we really burned this stuff? You know, we dug it out of the ground and we burned it for heat."
Well, we also blew mountains up and destroyed villages and towns and schools, and we didn't care.
Now you're getting picky, you know.
I mean, I'm not getting picky. I mean it. It's disgusting.
No, what happens in any industry, and what you bring up, mountaintop removal, and we have hydraulic fracking with natural gas. The industry likes to call those enhanced extraction techniques. What they really are, I mean, I like to refer to them as technologies of desperation. Whenever an industry is in decline, it's reaching its golden years, so to speak. It's just about ready to be non-competitive. You can come up with an enhanced extraction technique that will extend the life of that industry typically by about a year and a half, about 18 months. Mountaintop removal was an enhanced extraction technique. It was too expensive to mine it under traditional ways, and so let's just blow up a mountain and pick up the pieces. And it's a very efficient and effective way of mining. Doesn't do much for the environment, doesn't do much for the people who live around it, and of course the people who do this usually don't play nice in the sandbox. You know, they blow up the mountain, they take the money, and then they go away. We see this with the fracking as well. This is another enhanced extraction technique. It has a limited shelf life. It's kind of an industrialization of that and of the extraction, and it'll go away just because natural gas is a declining resource, and none of these resources go away totally. It's not like we dig up everything in the ground, because it gets more and more expensive. What you have to do is look at it in comparison with what are the alternatives, and when the alternatives are cheaper, you start replacing your go-to with something that is less expensive, such as in the case of fossil fuels, the environment is really focused only on wind, solar, and natural gas. Those are the only three fossil fuels that are players. Nuclear energy, for all purposes, is dead. There has not been a new nuclear power plant built in the United States since 1979, and they have about a 40-year life expectancy. So clearly, that industry is one in decline. Problem there is it's like riding the back of a tiger. You know, it's more expensive to shut down a nuclear power plant than it is to build one in the first place.
Well, we can't shut it down. It's not going anywhere. It's still alive. It's still generating nuclear waste.
It's a problem.
It's crazy. It's more than a problem. It's destructive. It has the power to destroy everything.
Well, this is one of the things, of course, I think, and we're tree-hugging environmentalists, you and I. I mean,
hug trees.
But it's I think those people who take the attitude of renewable energy oftentimes feel like those people in the fossil fuel industries get up each morning trying to figure out how to destroy the world. And they don't. They're typically just getting up trying to make a living. But what we in the renewable energy industry need to really focus on is the fact that now we're in the process of transitioning to a renewable energy nation. More people, if not already today, in the next year or two, will be working in the renewable energy industry than in the fossil fuel industry. And we see this specifically with solar, where solar employs around 400,000 people nationwide, but only generates about 1.5 to 2% of the electricity in our country. Whereas coal, on the other hand, the numbers vary when you look at them, how you measure them, but they're anywhere from 70,000 people up to about 250,000 people work in the coal industry or related industries. Yet they currently generate about 33% of the electricity. So if you're really worried about jobs, if you're worried about local economy, if you're worried about the long-term future of the economic development of this nation, renewable energy is the way to go. Fossil fuels, you know, they've had their day and they've done a lot of good things for this nation, but time to move on. Time to buy yourself a mobile phone. Get rid of that rotary dial thing.
So what do you think the utility companies, the corporations that make a lot of money that are also affiliated with the fossil fuel industry, what do you think they're going to do to stop or throw obstacles in the way of the development of renewable energy?
Yeah, well, when I think about that, I always like to think of the quote from Gandhi, where he said, you know, first they ignore you, then they ridicule you, then they attack you, and then you win. And for many years, the renewable energy industry was just ignored. Then you were always Prius driving, tree hugging, ha ha ha, you know, you guys. And so that's the making fun of. Well, now we're in the let's attack, because it's real money and it's affecting utilities. It's affecting some of the fossil fuel industries. And so I think what we're seeing is a transition in the utilities of solar is bad, solar is bad, solar is bad, solar is bad. And suddenly solar is good, but only if we're the only people who get to own it. And that's where they're at the moment. But they won't stop it. They can't stop it. You can't stop the tide. You can't keep the ocean back if the ocean's coming. So,
well, that's good news. Thank goodness.
It's all good.
All right. I'm Annie Warmke, and I'm with Jay Warmke, and we're discussing when the biomass hits the wind turbine. It's the end of the world as we know it. Thank God. Mm-hmm. So I guess the thing that is sort of hard to imagine is that we're in a process now of transitioning from internal combustion engine, which has been the major player for the last 100 years or so, to electric cars. And not just electric cars, but people who don't even utilize cars for transport in any way. I was just talking with our granddaughter last night where we were discussing the reason that she's decided that she's going to be 25 and she doesn't care about having a driver's license. And she talked about how she could use Uber or Lyft or friends, and the idea that it was a strategy that worked for her because she didn't want to have the expense of a vehicle. And plus, a lot of people, her friends, couldn't afford to own a vehicle. And so I just wonder what that transition looks like in terms of how you see the data and the trends.
Well, I mean, that brings up a number of things. One is the concept of a car as simply an app on your phone, which is really what you're saying. When Catelyn says she doesn't want to own a car, it is, if I need to get from here to there, all I need to do is just push this button on my phone and a car shows up and it takes me where I want to go. And that's the miracle of an Uber type thing. I don't really care about the self-driving cars. To me,
That's just a fad.
Well, I don't know about a fad, but it may be a fantasy similar to flying cars. You know, I'm still waiting for my flying car. Yeah. And George Jetson promised me one, and I still don't see it. But
there's got to be a joke in there somewhere.
Oh, well, probably. But anyway, self-driving flying cars.
Yeah, there we go.
But anyway, the idea there is that it is now a changing role of transportation in our society. The other one, though, is a transition from the internal combustion engine to the electric vehicle. And to me, that's an exciting thing in this whole transition to renewables, because if you plug something into the wall socket in your house, you don't really care, or you don't notice if the electricity that you're using was generated with coal, natural gas, solar, or wind. It's just running an outlet in your house. But how your vehicle drives, how you transport, that's a whole different world, and that's going to be exciting. So we're seeing most of the major automobile manufacturers today announcing they are transitioning to an all-electric fleet in the not-too-distant future, within a decade and a half for sure.
So where's all that electricity going to come from that we're going to have for our cars, to regenerate our cars and run our homes? Where is all that going to come from?
Well, electricity is energy in the future is not a problem. In fact, I'd like to say that of all the things that exist on this planet, the one thing that comes from off of this planet is energy. And NASA did a study, and they showed that all of the fossil fuels that have ever existed on the planet, all the coal, natural gas, oil, is the energy equivalent of 3 days of sunlight. And so
three days meaning since the beginning of time.
No, 3 days of sunlight, the energy, if you measured the energy of 3 days of sunlight, it is the equivalent of all of the fossil fuels that have ever existed on this planet.
Okay.
And we've used up about half of them, half of the fossil fuels. So we have created economic growth for the last 150 years since the Industrial Revolution, based on monetizing a day and a half of sunlight, the energy equivalent of that. So now that we're beginning to monetize actual sunlight, its energy is almost unlimited. And we're seeing the prices come down so dramatically that the real question in the future will be, how do we deal in a reality where energy is free and everything else is very expensive?
But we don't have to deal with the fact that our phone line is basically free. We have to pay for services. So isn't that how it's going?
Yeah. We look at bandwidth in your telephones. Bandwidth is essentially free now, but it doesn't mean your telephone is free. In fact, we pay quite a lot more for our communication services today than we did back in the day when you had simple dial-up, plain old telephones, as they like to say. So, what we will begin to see is energy will no longer in the future be sold as gallons of gasoline or kilowatt hours of electricity or even therms of natural gas. It will be sold in terms of services that don't currently exist, but we will not be able to live without them. Similar to 20 years ago, the internet didn't exist for all practical purposes. Mobile telephones did not exist for all practical purposes. But today, we would be hard-pressed to live without them.
Well, one of the things that has really been important in our lives is transitioning from just getting our electricity from the normal sources and creating the ability to generate electricity from sun. And I think that was a pretty easy transition for us. We really made it a celebratory kind of thing where we had lots of former students come and help install, and we all cheered and danced when the meter started to reverse itself and put energy back onto the grid instead of charging us for it. But I don't think, I guess I worry when we get to the point, which we've planned in the next 2 years, we will transition to an electric vehicle and how that's going to work. We decided when we were going to get the solar array that we would only try to utilize it for 75% of our energy needs, so that we would be forced to consider how to be conservative in our use. But now we're going to incorporate a car into that, and I just wonder, maybe people are wondering how that might work in their own lives, because you can't just go around plugging it in and not expect to pay for the electricity.
Right. Yeah, we're going to, of course, for our home use, it will require us to expand the solar array. That just goes without saying. You need to see about providing the energy that we'll be using for that. I'm not quite sure how it's going to play out with charging remotely. I mean, to this point, remote charging stations have been a bit of a novelty, and they're often just put out there as a public service, or you know, a nonprofit has put something out there, and there has not been a real metered way of charging your electric vehicle. But that's going to start to change. I anticipate that a lot of businesses will start to do similar to what they did with Wi-Fi. You know, this is a way to attract you to be in my store purchasing things. So while you're recharging your electric vehicle, I'm going to provide that to you free of charge, you know, free being in quotes, because you're going to be inside spending money on whatever it is I'm really trying, you know, $6 cups of coffee and things like that. And a lot of folks will say, well, okay, recharging your electric vehicle takes too long. But what we're seeing is a huge change in battery technology, but also just the nature of these lithium-ion batteries is you can charge it to about 90% full very, very quickly, probably only about 10 minutes. It's that last 10% that takes hours. So what you'll probably see happening is charging stations designed to get you to 90% full.
But most people are shopping their hearts out anyway, so well, it seems easy. But I know a few weeks ago we were in Cambridge, and we were really surprised to see that the Sheets, it's I-70, the Sheets place where they sell all kinds of coffee and food and gasoline, had a number of charging stations there, and it struck us as odd. Like, wow, Sheets must have done some kind of surveying and focus groups to figure out that people are really going to be demanding that of their gasoline stations.
Right. I think that Sheets has worked a deal with Tesla nationwide, and, mm-hmm. and they're going to be. So that's just sort of the camel's nose poking into our collective tent. We're beginning to see it happen. And it's going to be pretty dramatic when it starts happening. It's going to be exciting from my perspective. But, you know, a lot of folks who are used to things the way they were, every time there's a major transition like this, which we are undergoing, you know, we're undergoing a transition in our society similar to what happened during the Industrial Revolution, post-World War II. And there's always a reaction against this kind of thing of, I want to go back to the good old days that never truly existed, but these new things scare me.
Well, people have a hard time with change. That's just being human. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I think has been really important in our lives is that as people who want to live in a more sustainable, simple way, transportation has probably been one of the biggest issues in trying to figure out how do we have the best vehicle that we can afford that gives us the best ability to use less fossil fuel. And so we've had a hybrid vehicle for a number of years. And I think the point I'm trying to make is that it takes planning. whether you're going to change your life and say, all right, I'm going to transition to an electric vehicle, or I'm going to stay with the fossil fuel burning energy that I have for my car or my truck. And just to say, all right, just ask yourself the question, what would it really take for me to transition? What would be involved, and what would I have to give up? What would I gain by changing my vehicle? Because lots of people are driving very expensive vehicles, particularly huge trucks that cost starting at $50,000. And so they're not going to want to say, all right, next year I'm going to go lease myself or buy myself a vehicle. Also, the government is looking more, I know through Farm Service Agency and the USDA, they're looking more at electric vehicles. So there's a lot of things that are going to support those of us who maybe want to do some planning and want to make the transition, but do it in a way that's a lot more sustainable. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to see some help with that with groups like Tesla and even Sheetz. They want us to shop and buy things there. They're going to help us understand why we ought to be driving that electric vehicle and charging it with them.
Well, the world is going to change. You know, you can embrace that change and welcome the change, or you can be like me with my mobile telephone, and I hate everything about it, and I would just assume that they all went away. So, you know, this is just going to be our reality in the coming days, that we're going through a transition. Some people will adapt well and embrace that. Other people are going to be frustrated by it, and they're going to fight against it. So we'll all go out and buy horse and buggies and drive
scoop
around.
Scoop poop. Yeah, be soil farmers.
That's right.
All right. That sounds good to
There's
me.
There's a place for it.
Yeah. Well, I think it's interesting times, and the one thing that I would like to add is that everything we're talking about, there's a lot of transition already happening, and sometimes it feels very disruptive, but there's a lot of opportunity coming. And so just in the last few seconds we have, I was wondering if you might share just some ideas you have about what's going to happen 100 years from now. What are we going to look back? You and I'll be dead, but we might be watching from the cheap seats. So what will that be?
Oh, gosh, that's a big question. I mean, well, obviously, you know, people tend to overstate what's going to happen in the long term and understate what's going to happen in the short term. So, you know, I think we're going to find ourselves living in a world that's not that much different, struggling, you know, sitting around saying kids these days are no damn good. They don't understand, and they're all staring at their virtual reality box and not connected to the universe that we have grown to love. So, you know, everything stays the same and everything changes.
That's right. That's life. The one constant is change. You've been listening to When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine with Annie and Jay Warmke from Blue Rock Station. As my grandmother used to say, the secret to happiness is to play nice with others, clean up your mess, and eat your vegetables. Till next time. Mother Earth will sing, and her children will be here.